Chapter 73 Shinri 14 The ocean air smelled odd to Shinri. There was a coolness to it, a purity. The gentle rocking of the waves was calming in its repetition. It was so peaceful at times that she was almost able to ignore the twisting frustration she felt within. The peace was a lie. Though the boats moved with a sluggish rocking, their ponderous motions hid a demonic inevitability. They were taking her back to Avon. All of her attempts to escape, all of her planning and her worrying had been useless. In fact, her efforts had been worse than useless. Before her escape, she had at least been separated from him. Fate was a gleeful satirist, taking her struggles and using them to bind her even more closely to the man she hated. Though she sat primly on the deckside bench, wearing a new tala and shaded by a parasol, she felt as if she were drowning, as if she were tied to a boulder and sinking beneath the waves, being pulled toward the black depths, despite her frantic struggles to swim back up. "You're being foolish," Shinri told herself firmly. "You're going north, true, but you aren't going to him. Meryn won't turn you over. In fact, he'll probably leave you somewhere secure when he takes his armies to aid Alethkar." But Meryn didn't understand King Avon. Avon was so powerful of both mind and will. Meryn had fought well on the Na'na docks, but he was still just a boy. Avon was something else. Something barely human, something more like Lady Yasna, capable of manipulating the emotions and politics of entire nations with frightening consistency. Could Meryn protect her? Shinri doubted it. Only distance would keep her from Avon Vaidenel. Several Lochinron handmaidens sat beside her, and they suddenly began whispering excitedly in their tongue. Shinri didn't need to look to know that Meryn had emerged from his cabin. He walked the foredeck often, obviously preferring the open sky to the confines of his quarters. Shinri eyed the handmaidens, noting with dissatisfaction their dreamy looks and giggling blushes. In a way, however, they had a right to their idolization. They didn't know Meryn. To them, he was simply the handsome young warrior who had so dramatically defeated 5 shardbearers at once. He had single-handedly ended 30 years of oppression, freeing Lochinron and restoring its monarchy. Sensational retellings of that day had embellished the truth, making it seem like Meryn had flown with the winds themselves, making 100-foot leaps and striking down his foes with ease. How could the girls not fawn over such a seemingly legendary figure? Shinri forced herself to look at him, studying the man Meryn Colin. He wore new clothing, though, like always, he had kept the deep blue Colin cloak that didn't quite fit him. He stood straight-backed and confident as he looked northward, several aides speaking quietly at his side. He had a power, too, though not the same kind as Avon. Meryn didn't control events consciously, but he had a habit of putting himself in extreme situations and surviving. Such people as he created stories unintentionally, influencing the world by presence rather than design. Of course, there was more to him than that. The stories told of that day on the docks were exaggerated, but Shinri had been there to see the truth behind them. She had seen Meryn leap from the deck of a ship and land safely on the wooden docks some 20 or 30 feet below. She had seen him jump toward his enemies, covering an unnatural distance in the air, then swing his blade with inhuman power. He had sliced a man in shard plate completely in two, treating the awakened metal as if it were nothing more than common steel. Renarin had been right. Meryn Colin was not a normal man. He was indeed both a fool and a hero. and he was also her enemy. There was no quibbling about this fact in her mind. Shinri's captivity was unspoken, but it was real. Meryn had refused her request to let her remain in Lochinron, showing a hint of guilt in his eyes as he did so. He knew that she was no guest, nor just a lady beneath his protection. She was his prisoner, his tool. Yet he was not an undefeatable enemy. He was no Aven, capable of quelling her with a single glance. Beneath the hero, he was still a confused boy. Shinri could see the worries and uncertainties in his eyes. He was growing more self-confident, of course, as his authority increased. That, however, would only make him more vulnerable. Lady Yasna had often said that noblemen were far more easy to manipulate than peasants. Peasants would do what you said, true, but their simple honesty often made their hearts difficult to sway. A nobleman learned to be more compromising, and a man who compromised could be exploited. Citizens only had one imperative: follow commands. Noblemen had to follow multiple masters, and the reconciliation between their ethics, their beliefs, their commands, and their goals was another potential source of exploitation. Shinri was fairly certain she had determined Meryn's weakness: his honor. She watched him carefully, waiting for him to dismiss his aides. He usually did so eventually, for he liked to watch the waves alone. After a few moments, he waved the men away, then stepped forward to stand beside the gunwale in his customary position. Stilling her nerves, Shinri rose. Days spent in contemplation had determined that she had only one chip to play. Hopefully, it would be enough. Meryn glanced at her as she approached, then turned back toward his contemplation of the ocean. The blue sea was dotted with ships, the other four Tenset vessels of the fleet floating around their flagship. Smaller vessels scuttled between the ships, delivering messages or shifting supplies. Now, standing closer, she could see that Meryn's face was even more troubled than usual. He stared toward the ships, not toward the goal ahead.
"They keep looking toward me for instructions," he said.
Shinri paused. Was he asking her advice?
"Shouldn't they seek your leadership?"
"I don't see why they should," he said. "Who am I to have anything important to say?"
"You are their savior," Shinri said carefully.
Meryn snorted.
"I didn't bring them salvation, Shinri. I just killed some men. It's nothing special. That's what I've been trained to do. If they want a savior, they should look to the monk who trained me in dueling, or perhaps the sergeants who taught me the spear."
"You did more than just kill people, Meryn," Shinri said. "You gave the Lochinrons courage. You gave them a will to fight, then convinced them to sail north, to face their enemy. And you could quite possibly save your own kingdom in the process."
Meryn didn't appear persuaded by her logic. He leaned against the gunwale pensively, tapping his finger against the wood. He was wearing the jade bracelet again, she noticed. He had gone without it for several days after the battle, but now it was back.
"Tamar's king now," Meryn said. "He leads this people, not me. Yet he keeps sending messengers to ask my will for the fleet, as if I would know about water foraging or scouting processes. He wants my input on everything. It almost seems like he wants my approval. Do you think, perhaps, that he was beneath Vaden command so long that he feels inadequate leading on his own?"
"Perhaps," Shinri said. "But not likely."
"Why then?" Meryn asked. "Why keep looking to me?"
"Well," Shinri said, "you did kind of appoint him as king."
"No, I didn't," Meryn complained.
"Sure you did," Shinri said. "What did you think you were doing when you walked up and bestowed that shard blade upon him? Everyone had just seen the way you fought. There are already whispers of your being an epic warrior, and I wouldn't be surprised to find Renarin behind them. Either way, you set yourself up as something greater than a monarch, something capable of offhandedly granting a king a shard blade, then commanding him to lead his people at your will. And you're surprised that now he thinks he has to seek your approval?
Meryn blushed at the comment, glancing down toward the passing waves below.
He was so earnest. That didn't stop him from being her enemy, but it did make him somewhat more tolerable. A part of her, a very small part, true, but it was there, nonetheless, was reticent to take advantage of his weaknesses. However, she felt far more terrified of returning to Avon than she felt guilty for using Meryn.
"There is something I must speak to you about," she said carefully, trying to make her voice sound weak and feminine.
Meryn looked up, sensing a change in the conversation. "This is about our returning to Alethkar, isn't it?" he guessed. Shinri nodded. "I have already promised you that you will be in no danger," he said. "I won't bring you into the war, Shinri, but I have to see that you are kept safe. I can only do that if you are here, with the fleet. Where I can keep track of you," his voice implied.
She trailed off, allowing a little bit of her fear to show in her eyes. It came out more forcefully than she had expected, her honest emotions boiling free.
She was surprised to feel a tear run down her cheek.
"What?" Meryn asked with alarm, perking up.
"I can't go back to him, Meryn," Shinri whispered.
"Who?" Meryn asked. "King Avon?"
Shinri nodded.
Meryn, that man took me as his wife. He claimed me, made me his own, and forced himself upon me."
Meryn paled, his Aleth sensibilities wrung by her blunt words.
She exaggerated, of course, but he needn't know that she had gone willingly that first time.
"I can't go back," she said intensely. "I can't be near him. Even with your promises of safety, I spent nights awake, terrified. If he defeats you, if he destroys the Aleth armies, he will come for me. Whatever keep you sequester me in, it won't be strong enough to resist his rage. He was harsh to me before, when he thought me subservient. If he catches me now, after I defied him and tried to run?"
She paused, looking up and meeting his eyes.
"He hurt me before, Meryn," she whispered. "If he finds me again, it will be worse, far worse. If you bring me to Alethkar with you, then what he does to me will be partially your fault."
This was her chip. She could see the struggle of honor within him, the weight of her words pressing against his desire to help Alethkar. He was a good man, and good men, unfortunately, were often the easiest to manipulate. He opened his mouth to respond, but Shinri cut him off with a calculated plea.
"Send me to Thelena," she asked, "on one of the smaller scout ships. I know King Amelin. He is a friend. You won't be losing me. You'll be putting me in a safe location. A fortified island, well patrolled and well defended. I can plead Alethkar's need before the king. He will listen to me and perhaps send support."
Meryn considered her words.
"I don't know," he finally said.
"You don't know?" she said. "You would use me. Just like him. At least he only took my body. You want my powers too."
"No," Meryn objected.
"Then let me go," she challenged. "Prove your honor, Lord Curlin. Prove that you deserve the respect this fleet has seen fit to give you."
And now, the most powerful words of all, at least where Meryn is concerned.
"Ask yourself, Meryn, what would Lord Dalinar tell you to do?"
Meryn closed his eyes. Finally, he took a deep breath and turned away from her.
"Very well," he agreed.